Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
I have this new book that I've written, and it's all about this psycho-spiritual disease of the soul that is potentially destroying our species. And so, you know, indigenous cultures from time immemorial have been tracking this, and I've just translated it into a psychological modern idiom. And so that's what I would love to talk about today.
Okay, I'm here. And sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. I freaking hate Skype sometimes, especially when you first start coming on the show and it completely drops off and takes about like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes to reset. That's really irritating, as if I wasn't irritated enough already starting off with this program. Okay. Paul Levy, glad to see that you've got your webcam on. Glad to see that we can hear you speaking. And glad to see us all here now, nicely and freshly. Before we begin this interview, I just need to say a few things to the audience. Is that cool, bro? Because the other night we were out at this GCSB meeting, right? And the GCSB is like the NSA of New Zealand. In fact, it's part of the NSA, technically. And what they're doing now is they're passing this legislation to completely frack all of us and basically abolish privacy in New Zealand and bring us completely and totally into the global surveillance state that we call the New World Order globalists, that kind of thing. And today there is a protest at 2 p.m. In central Auckland at Altair Square. And I will be there with a 100-watt megaphone. I will be the loudest. And I will be saying the truth, whether all the other protesters want me to hear it or not. Last night I watched a film called The Dark Knight, and you know what's interesting about The Dark Knight is that you either you live long enough
and you become the bad guy, or you die the hero. And sometimes you need a hero who's willing to sacrifice themselves, essentially, to make the call and to make the choice that others can't make. And that's what I'm going to be doing at this protest today. I'm going to be talking the truth about the New World Order and what it truly means and what the surveillance system is actually a part of. And I expect that I will be hassled by the protesters. I expect that all the socialists and things like that all want to protect free speech and whatever will tell me to shut up and will tell me that, oh, the punters won't get it, etc., etc., etc. I don't care what they think because they're wrong. It's just that simple. All right, that's out of the way. My very special guest, Paul Levy, welcome to the program. He's a pioneer in the field of spiritual emergence. And I'm a pioneer in the art of microphone awareness. Yeah. All right. There we go. There's the right setting. Paul is a pioneer in the field of spiritual emergence, as well as an innovator in the field of dreaming, both night dreams as well as waking dreams. So he's in the television, I bet. A Tibetan Buddhist practitioner for over 30 years. He has intimately studied with some of the greatest spiritual masters of Tibet and Burma. He is the author of The Madness of George Bush, a reflection of our collective psychosis, as well as Wetiko, the greatest epidemic sickness known to humanity. His last book, Dispelling Wetiko, has had a lot of great reviews, like this one. Quote, "I always look forward to reading Paul's work. It stimulates me to greater heights of lucidity, disturbs me enough to awaken me out of my complacency, and encourages me to fly on the wings of the creative imagination. The world would be a better place if everyone read this book. His vision is a royal gift for all of us. It makes me want to sing. Bravo." There's some glowing reviews there, Paul. I'm sure you'll be happy with that. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
And I missed what it was that you wanted to talk about, but I guess I'll find out. So why don't you just go right ahead and explain what you want to talk about today?
Sure. Okay. Well, what I would like to talk about is what my new book is about, which is basically an inquiry into the psycho-spiritual disease of the soul that we all potentially have as it exists in the collective unconscious of our species. And it's potentially taking us down, and it's informing the very self and other destruction that we are currently enacting, both individually, within ourselves, interpersonally, between each other, and collectively on the world stage. And it's at the root of all the evil that we're playing out, both personally and archetypically. And yet what the book is pointing out, so all indigenous cultures from time immemorial, all cultures based on wisdom have been articulating this disease, this mind parasite, this psychic vampire, this tapeworm, this virus of the psyche. And so I've just translated it into a modern psychological idiom. And yet what I've discovered, and what a lot of people have discovered, not just me, I'm more the translator, that encoded in this illness that's actually destroying us, it actually can help us to wake up to the dreamlike nature of reality. And that's what the whole book is about. And so people all over the world.
So this is, so it's about archons, psychopaths, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. The Gnostics call archons is exactly what the Native American people call Wetiko, or however you say it. You can say it a number of different ways. That's the way I say it. But right, it's exactly about the archons of Gnosticism.
Yeah. Don't touch me there. Wetiko. And I also wanted to iterate that this is something that we've covered on the show twice in the last week. We had two roundtable discussions, first about psychopaths and the second about archons as well. And there's a number of different things we've discovered about them. Number one, the most surprising for me was that they're infectious. They can actually take your mind over. That's really crazy.
That's how they work. They're contagious. And they work through the channel of the unconscious blind spot in the psyche. And if somebody who's taken over and is a carrier of it, and keep in mind, we all potentially have it. So it makes no sense to say, oh, that person, you know, is possessed by it, like they're separate from us, because the only way to see it is to recognize the dreamlike nature of reality in which we're all interconnected and we're just characters in each other's dreams. But when you see that we're interconnected and interdependent and not separate, and you discover that, oh my God, if somebody is a carrier of it, if they're at that moment taken over by it, and if we don't see that, and if we actually support them, then it actually gets into our psyche through our unconscious blind spot in such a way that it compels us to act itself out, and then we become unwittingly the channel for its incarnation, and simultaneously it hides itself from being seen. So it is very infectious. It's contagious. It's actually what the indigenous people call the Watiko virus. It's a collective psychosis. And if you haven't, you know, I'm sure you're aware that we're in the middle of a psychic epidemic, a collective psychosis of titanic proportions. And yet part of the psychosis is that very few people are even talking about it.
Mm. Well, it was occurring to me during the past roundtable discussions that is this infection transmittable via electronic communication?
Well, the thing is, it's actually contagious via like an infinitude of different channels. And when you see all this as a dream, this whole world,
one of those channels, of course, being Fox News. Go ahead.
Yeah. Then you see there are multiple channels of transmission. So it gets into us via our unconscious blind spot, but it's continually pummeling our psyche through the mainstream media is one of the major organs of propaganda of the Watiko virus. It'll co-opt whatever's available to us to become its mode of transmission. So sure, definitely.
Mm. Well, it's funny you should say this because just yesterday I was, I think we had a discussion about aliens, and one of the listeners on my Facebook page comes out and says that I'm promoting Satanism, that I'm a psychopath and things like that, just because we're discussing the topic of aliens on the show and had a guest on to talk about it.
Right. And that shouldn't surprise you, because the way Watiko works is when, for example, somebody is actually pointing at it and shedding light on it, because when you see it and find its name and see how it operates and just, you know, flood light on it, it takes away its power. So when somebody, whether it's with you or me or whoever, when we're actually in the role of actually exposing it and shedding light on it, people who are still infected by it are then going to see us as the ones who are like the bad guys, or are the ones who are crazy, or the ones who are like demon infested, when actually they're seeing their own reflection.
You know, that's actually what occurred to me most is I've dealt with a number of these people. And it's what's funny is that in the same sentence of accusing me of something, they'll do the exact something that they're accusing you of.
Yeah. Well, that's a main quality of Watiko. In other words, I talk about all of this in my book because I say basically that people who are taken over by Watiko, what they're accusing other people of doing is what they themselves are doing, but they don't see it. So it's like an inversion where they self-righteously think they're the ones who are awake, but they're actually reacting to their own, like their own reflection in the mirror.
Like a they're like budgies, you know, some kind of a mindless parrot of a bird just sitting there. There's my friend over there, and I'm not alone. Actually, you are alone, and you're the only one who thinks like you do because you're freaking psychotic, mate.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I could just describe how it works, because this is what my whole book is about, is mapping it, you know, of how this mind virus works. So it shapeshifts, and it will assume your form. So it takes it, you know, it puts you on and putting you on having a double meaning it fools you, but it puts you on as if you're a suit of clothes. And if you don't see what's going on, the next thing you know, you will identify with its thought forms and its impulses, assuming they're your own. And then you unwittingly start acting out on these impulses that you believing are your own, coming from your own mind, but you're actually feeding the parasite. It's like when a tapeworm gets in your system, it will secrete chemicals in such a way that you begin to crave food that actually feeds the tapeworm, and all the while you believe you're feeding yourself, but it grows bigger until it kills the host, which is you. And that's the way the Wattico virus works, you know, and it works via our unconsciousness of it. Like, as soon as we start to get switched onto it and to become conscious of it, then it has no power over us. So it will do everything in its power to stop that from happening.
Is it possible to get these entities out of people once they've fully taken control? Like, is George H.W. Bush beyond redemption or not?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting question because, you know, and I'm not sure I have a, you know, a real sort of this definitive answer for that.
I'll take that as a no then.
Well, but it is the case, right? Well, that's one potential answer, but it is the case that certain people are so possessed by these you know, whatever you call them, these viruses, these mind viruses, that it could be for this lifetime that they're, in a way, they're not able to be redeemed. And, you know, but the thing which is important is, like, with George W. Bush or his father, you begin, like, why I wrote my book about the madness of Bush. I was pointing out that he was so taken over by this psychic disease that we could say he was the incarnation of it in human form, which is to say he's the revelation of it, which means when you see this as a dream and you realize George W. Bush is not separate from us, he's actually the objective, he's objectively showing us what that illness looks like. It's a formless higher dimensional illness that exists in our own mind, and there it is in front of us. And if we recognize that George W. Bush is incarnating and actually revealing that, it also dissolves the sense of separation, and out of that comes compassion.
Well, and that was another thing that occurred to me. What if you spiked their drink with an ecstasy tablet that gives you overwhelming, arching feelings of empathy? Would it work?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I've seen people who are really taken over by it who will do certain, you know, these sacred substances. And what typically happens is that their perceptions at a certain point will get filtered through their illness. You see, here's something important to understand. Oh, okay, it's actually something like that really can help us to see it, but I might just wait till we come back after the break to discuss this, because...
Yeah, I think that's good, because that's right. A cliffhanger. Ladies and gentlemen, sorry to do this to you, but we need to hold your attention until after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. One of my great heroes is, in fact, Bill Hicks, mostly because he's kind of he woke me up so monumentally to just how hilarious scumbaggery actually can be, which I think is a really healthy coping mechanism because, hey, if you don't laugh at the scumbaggery, you'll probably be destroyed and have your nuggety brain places corrupted by it. My very special guest is Paul Levy. And is it pronounced Levy or Levy? Because if it's pronounced...
No, you were pronouncing it. I was actually impressed. So, yeah.
Okay. Because if it was pronounced Levy, I was going to make a New Orleans joke. And like we're going to try and open you up or something like that, Katrina style. Now, we were talking over the break about how when you're being attacked by these people, you can't really go back and attack them back because it's a feedback loop. They send out negative energy, and if you return negative energy to them, you're actually feeding them, and they get worse.
Yeah. They actually feed off of fear and off of your unconscious reactions to them. And so that's kind of why it's really important to understand what their nature is. And so just to, you know, to trip out, because from the objective point of view, these seeming entities that, you know, indigenous people call Watiko or the Archons, they actually don't even objectively exist at all, separate from your own mind. So that's what's really interesting, because these seeming, and I always say seeming entities because that's the way they appear, but I don't want to invest them with any sort of ultimate reality. They can actually destroy us individually, collectively, our entire species, and they actually don't even exist. And that's pointing at something. That's pointing at the incredible creative power that's inherent in our own mind that we're not awake to.
Well, we've got the power over them, and but the problem is we don't recognize that we have it, much like the people versus the New World Order. The people have the power, but they think that the New World Order does, and it's a deception. If they would simply realize their own internal power as a human race, we could throw off our chains, throw off the scumbaggery.
And that's even true on the individual dimension like that. What the Watiko virus does, it actually subverts our own genius for co-creating reality against us in a way that's destroying us. And so when each one of us actually really floods light on this, you know, this demonic entity that actually is this daimonic entity, and the word daimon, it actually means the guiding spirit. And, you know, it actually has to do with one's genius. When you actually see and shed light on it, and see how it works, then you actually are able to access your genius in a way such that you can actually co-dream a whole new dream. And that's evolutionary, and that's what this is all about. It's almost like, to the extent we're unconscious of these parts of ourselves, of course they get dreamed up in a seemingly negative way, and then we just, you know, react to them and feed it and act out our unconsciousness in a destructive, self and other destructive way. And yet the whole point is, once we actually recognize that something is being shown to us, then we could connect with our own light. And that's evolution.
You've heard of the story of the cosmic schmuck?
No, please enlighten me.
All right. So how do you figure out if you're a cosmic schmuck? The answer is, you never question whether or not you are the cosmic schmuck. If you're always thinking from time to time, am I the cosmic schmuck here? Then it's very unlikely that you'll actually become him, because you're questioning it all the time. You're self-analyzing.
And that's really cool, because the thing about Watiko is that you discover part of its nature is that at any moment, any of us could be taken over. And, you know, think about it. Who among us has not, in the course of our lives, unwittingly, with the best of intentions, you know, acted out their unconscious in a way that's been hurtful, either to ourselves or to somebody we're close to? So when you realize that, oh my God, any of us could unwittingly become the instrument to act out this, like, you know, this sort of negative energy, then that cultivates a sense of like being humble. And having like that, the humbleness, that's an inoculation, an immunization toward, you know, from the Watiko bug.
And also, I wanted to explain the reptilian brain response as well, because everybody's had these. And this is how you know whether or not you're acting on your instinct, your reptilian brain, or you're actually thinking about it. You ever said something or done something, and you know that had you taken a few deep breaths, counted to 10, you wouldn't have said the same thing? You wouldn't have done the same thing? That's right. The reptilian brain response. It's an instant just...
That's to be taken over. So that, like I was saying, Watiko is this daimonic energy. Now, daimonic means it's an archetypal transpersonal. It has to do with that reptilian energy. It's a transpersonal archetypal energy that literally possesses us, or groups of us, or our entire species in such a way that we then become compelled to act it out. And so that's when somebody is taken over by the Watiko virus, they have no idea that they're possessed. They just feel so much completely fully themselves. And yet they're actually, it's almost like they're this puppet on a string, and they're the instrument for this archetypal transpersonal energy to compel them to become its instrument of incarnation into the third dimension.
Is it possible to recognize whether or not you're being taken over by these entities and then get rid of them?
Yeah. That's what my whole book is about. Sure. Because, for example, when, you know, I mean, because that is the question. And one thing I was going to say right before the break, one way to understand how these entities work, they, like I said, they operate through the unconscious, through the blind spots. They work through the projective tendencies of our own mind because we're always projecting. Think about what a projection is. It's like when you're in a dream, it's an inkblot. It's a projection. And whatever we actually project moment by moment instantaneously gets reflected back by the dream. Now, that's showing us something because say if you're holding a particular point of view in a dream, right? And so you're seeing through a particular lens. Well, what is the dream but a reflection, a projection of your own mind? So if you hold a viewpoint in a dream, the dream has no choice but to shapeshift and in no time whatsoever instantaneously reflect back and give you all the evidence you need to confirm the seeming objectivity of your viewpoint. And then if you don't see that process, then all of a sudden now you become convinced of the objective truth of your viewpoint, which you become even more fixed in because now you have seeming evidence to confirm it. And now you by becoming even more fixed in that viewpoint, you'll even see in more that way, which will then ad infinitum, dream up the dream to offer even more proof confirming your seeming the truth of your viewpoint. The point is that's an infinitely self-created feedback loop in which you've actually entranced yourself by your genius to call forth reality. And understanding that helps you to snap out of the spell because it's exactly like being under a spell of Watiko, of evil.
Like being a religious fanatic. There's people out there who believe absolute insanity. You know, they read religious texts and they interpret them completely wrong. And yet, right. Anybody questions anything that they say that is based on that is loosely based and completely made up on this religious text is therefore an agent of Satan.
Yeah, well, that's an important thing to understand because it's not just one person who will hold that like completely insane viewpoint, but typically they then will attract other people who are also, entranced in a particular way, and then they'll both reinforce and feed off of and into each other's madness in a way that an impenetrable bubble will get conjured up around them, that and any reflection or any evidence that shows the falseness of their viewpoint or their madness will then get perversely interpreted against the messenger to then confirm even more deeply their madness. And that's like this form of like this narcissism, this collective narcissism. And another name for that is collective psychosis. And we see that both in the religious realm and the political realm and all different dimensions. So you see, and that has to do with the infectious, contagious nature of this mind virus.
Mm-hmm. And I always worry about this as well because I'm really good at speaking and getting viewpoints across and things like that. And my great fear is that I might get taken over by one of these parasites and all my talents and my skills for that I'm currently using for good will be flipped around and I'll start manipulating people and being a real evil scumbag. And I really fear that potential of how much damage I could really do to people's lives if that was to happen.
And that's really good that you're aware of that potential, because, like we were saying before, that's an inoculation, against the virus. Now, the thing is, too, is that having that continual self-reflection and that mindfulness and also surrounding yourself with people who aren't just always like just patting you on the back and like these yes men, but are actually having the courage to hold up mirrors when they see you get out of balance because we're all a work in progress. That's really important to conjure up like a real supportive community where, and one way to understand this, when you're awakening in a dream, it's easy to get absorbed back in the dream. But then when you connect with a bunch of people who are awakening in the dream, you realize we can all help each other to stabilize our lucidity. And so, and that's a real spiritual community.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, I feel really blessed as well, Paul, because I've surrounded myself with people who aren't yes men, with free thinking individuals who like what I do. But the second that I do something that they don't like, I hear about it instantly.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic.
And it causes me to reflect on it. Yeah.
I have all these groups and people. I so empower them to call me on my shit because that's what I want. I want to deepen my own.
We can't say those words. We can't say those words on FCC regulated radio, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Even though they're appropriate. And this really irritates me about freedom of speech in the United States. Is there isn't any? All right. And I just want to a little message passed on to the FCC. It's two letters, F you. All right. Well, anyway, Levy, continue.
Yeah. So one of the things about Watiko, because, you know, I just describe it in my book in as many ways as I can imagine, okay? And because, you know, one of the solutions is to get in touch with the sacred creative imagination, you know, that we all have to actually create our world. And the thing about Watiko, it's a form of blindness, of psychic blindness. But not only is it a form of blindness, but it's a form of blindness that it believes that it's sighted, but not only does it believe that it's sighted, it believes that it's more sighted than anyone else. So it's completely perverse. And, you know, so, yeah, that's why when you see somebody taken over by this bug to try to proselytize or convince them, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't help because, you know, it would be much better to actually try and teach somebody the art of how to see. Okay.
A great example here. I was talking about this possible entity who's accusing me of being a Satanist. Here's one of his comments. Now to go and thumb down every single video he has ever uploaded. It's a start, a first step in this campaign.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
What a waste of time. Have you no life?
Right. No, totally. And that's something, I mean, we have to become accustomed. I mean, me too. I get all these emails of people who read my work and really appreciate it and have their eyes opened, or just they basically say, wow, you've been able to find the language for stuff that I've been sensing or feeling but didn't have the words for. But then every now and then I'll hear from that same guy, you know, that guy who's like, oh, I'm like crazy or I'm a demonist or whatever. And you just have to be okay with that because, and that to me, that's showing us that we're on the right path, that we're actually triggering people like that.
Well, yeah, the Lancaster bomber pilots who used to run bombing missions over Germany from England had a saying, when you're copping the flak, which means when you're being shot at, you're over the target. And that's when you need to keep dropping your payload. And I don't know about you and how you feel about this, but I've started to revert back to maybe my earlier Christian upbringing, my earlier Catholic upbringing, and feel as though there's a war between light and dark. There really truly is. The light is about awareness, about acceptance, about having a conscience and being kind and loving and that kind of thing. And the dark is the antithesis to everything like that. And it is a true war, but it's not only without outside of us, it's also within us.
Yeah. No, I fully agree with that. In the person who wrote the foreword to my book talks, she quoted, there's this quote from the Bible, something about, you know, the powers of darkness, it's powers and principalities. So the idea being it's not just something in like us as people, but it's some sort of like more cosmic powers of light and dark that are in a sense in like this cosmic drama or cosmic conflict that we've gotten drafted into being the intermediaries or in the middle of. And it's the ultimate point is that those light energies and those dark energies, they're actually in us. So that's one of the ways of getting entranced and falling under the spell of the Watiko demon is when we see the evil out there, we then concretize it as being outside of ourselves and we don't recognize it's our own reflection. And by having that sense of separation, that feeds the demon.
I once went to a protest and said through a megaphone, John Key's our Prime Minister right now, and John Key is a scumbag! And then somebody came up to me and said, well, Vinny, actually, if you accuse John Key of being a scumbag, it means that you're just projecting a reflection of yourself. And I go, that's right. And unless I expose the scumbaggery within myself as well, I'll be dead. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Live from the Chateau de Rothschild, nestled nicely in the hills of Sicily, where incidentally a 33rd degree Freemason started up this whole thing. And one of our special guests is Paul Levy, and we're talking about psychopaths and scumbaggery and the Archons and the Wendigo, which, if you're not careful, You might want to call your children if they're being naughty. Welcome back, sir. Now, we were talking over the break about how it's really good to meet other people that are of like mind. And now on the last couple weeks of this show, about 8 hours out of 20 have been talking about psychopaths. And you said that that's not an accident.
Yeah, it's totally not an accident. I mean, it has to do with, you know, there's a collective psychosis going on. And one way to understand it, you know, from the psychological, you know, in the book, one of the aspects I talk about is the psychological point of view. And when we get, when we're, you know, because we're all in trauma, our species is suffering, you know, a form of PTSD. And what happens, you know, it's very simple. So we'll be in trauma, we split off from a part of ourselves, from our whole, part of our wholeness gets disassociated. And if we don't, if we aren't able to integrate that, that split off part develops an autonomy, and it, the word is it becomes an autonomous complex, and that'll have a seeming life and seemingly independent will of its own that's contrary to our own will. Now, the ancient people had this other name for autonomous complexes. It's what they would call a demon. Okay, and it's exactly what Watiko is, or the Archons are, but the origin, it's important to not forget, the origin is our own mind. And so, you know, and the way to even more deeply, the way to understand just the psychology behind this phenomena is an inquiry into our own darkness, into our own shadow, because to the extent that we're not, you know, really reflective and owning our own shadow, well, then what happens? We disassociate from it, and we split it off, and we project it out outside of ourselves. And being that this is a dream, and that this is so important to understand, when we project out our own shadow, similar, just think about what I was just talking about a few minutes ago, about when in a dream you hold a viewpoint, the dream will supply evidence to confirm your viewpoint. When you project out the shadow, well, somebody who has even the slightest little hook, will they'll be the recipient of your shadow projection, like you put your coat on a hook to hang it. Well, when you project out the shadow, you know, onto whoever's the recipient who has those qualities, that will amplify those dark, those evil qualities, which will make it more probable that they're going to manifest in that way. And as soon as they do, now you have evidence that the shadow is actually outside of yourself, which will confirm you and your viewpoint that the shadow isn't in you, it's out there. So you'll even more project the shadow. And of course, they're doing the same thing to you. And then what ultimately happens, you try to destroy the person who's embodying your own shadow, which is a reflection of how you're actually trying to get rid of your own evil. And by doing that, you actually have become possessed by the very evil that you're trying to destroy. And what I've just described is an articulation of how the Watiko virus works.
It possesses you, projects an image, a false reality for you, and if you react and march to its tune of that false reality, it sticks with you and takes you over completely. Is that about right?
And not only does it take you over in the sense that you become possessed, but part of it is that you unconsciously identify with it. So it's the weirdest psychological phenomena, but it's very true when you just see it in yourself. When you become taken over by something, you can't see it because you're identical with it. So you become unconsciously, you know, you have an identification with it. And yeah, just what you described, then that whole dynamic, you know, if you don't have insight into it, then you've unwittingly become an instrument for the very evil that you're fighting against in the world.
It's kind of like fluoride. You know how fluoride reduces IQ, right, in the Zhang study. Mm-hmm. How would you know that you're slightly dumber than before? And the answer is you wouldn't. Similar thing. Yeah.
It's the same thing. When we're possessed, by definition, we don't know we're possessed, you know? And that's why it's really, really helpful to have a real awake community of people who we can all, like, reflect back to each other when we see ourselves getting slightly out of balance, because that's really, really helpful.
It's kind of like how the ancient Egyptians used light bouncing off mirrors in order to light dark places and the pyramids and so on and so forth, right? So if you've got all this wonderful light coming in, but you've got none of these mirrors around you to help bounce it off, kind of thing, you're in the darkness.
Yeah. And the thing that I talk about, like, for example, there's a big in the town I live in, and I'm not going to name names, there is this, you know, the big sort of metaphysical, like, bookstore. and they won't even carry my new book because they're just so identified with the light that they, you know, they think, oh, I'm just focusing too much on evil. But the point of any sort of enlightenment is that it makes no difference at all how much light you have if it doesn't actually shed light on darkness. And so what I'm pointing at is the incredible importance of flooding light on the darkness within ourselves and in the world, you know, as the way to wake up. And that's profoundly, profoundly important.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I'm sure there's all these new agey people that always tell me that, oh, Vinny, you're focusing too much on the negative, such and such, and blah blah blah, and it's all your problem, it's all your projection. No, yeah. No, evil freaking exists, and if you freaking ignore it, it'll kill you.
Yeah, no, that's really, it's really, if I can say a few words more about that, because it's really important to understand that I talk about exactly the example with the bookstore in my book. I say by being identified with the light so fully, this bookstore is actually an incredible fear against the darkness. So they're avoiding the darkness, they're contracting against the darkness, and by doing that, they're unwittingly feeding it. Now, that's very different than if you see the darkness and then you choose as a sovereign being where you want to invest your attention. Then you can choose, oh, I see you talking to the darkness. Now I want to invest my attention in creating the world I want to live in. That doesn't feed evil. Then you're actually an instrument for the light.
Kind of like, I like those words. I see you. And this is actually, those three words have been running through my mind recently. I've been thinking about a couple of psychopaths have done me wrong and a couple of that are in charge of my nation right now that are doing my people wrong. And those three words have been coming through my head the whole time. I see you. I see you for what you are.
Yeah. But here's the thing, you know, to not forget, you see, the trippiest thing about the Wetiko virus is that it collapses the seeming boundary between the inner and the outer in such a way that it's an inner disease of the soul that actually explicates itself through the medium of the outside world in a synchronistic fashion. So when we see somebody, you know, who's like, say, this leader or say, and, you know, fully taken over by the Wetiko virus, and they're a real psychopath at that particular moment, and we actually see them, you know, if we actually think they're separate from us, then we ourselves have fallen under the spell of Wetiko because it feeds off of polarization. But when we see them as, oh yeah, they're embodying what it is to be a psychopath, to be taken over by Wetiko, and we recognize they're a reflection of that part of ourselves, then we discover, oh, this inner disease of the soul that exists inside of my own mind is actually getting synchronistically expressed via the outside world. That's to wake up, and that point of view dispels Wetiko. And what I just described, that's to recognize what I call this being a dream, the dreamlike nature of reality.
So in other words, more correctly, would just be, I see you, and I see you within me as well.
Yeah. And that's why the Wetiko dissolver par excellence is compassion. Because when you actually see through the illusion of separation, the expression of that realization is compassion. But sometimes compassion is fierce. It's not like compassion is always smiley face and patting each other on the back. Sometimes compassion says no and sets a boundary and is incredibly fierce when you see somebody acting out something that's actually hurtful, whether it be to the environment or to the whole population.
And I've also got another thing. Is it okay to be angry? Is it okay to be enraged with bad things going on, or is that simply a way of getting yourself infected?
Yeah. Well, the thing is it's important to make the distinction between, you know, if we get, because everybody, how can you not have rage and be in this world with what's playing out? You
would have to be insane. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, you know, it depends if you just get, if you unconsciously get possessed by the anger and the rage and you just act it out, then you're actually feeding evil and feeding the Wetiko germ because it feeds off of, you know, like certain negative energies. But if you access your rage and your anger and constructively, creatively, instead of destructively, but constructively express it, in whatever creative way, yeah, that actually is what that dispels Watiko. So that would be, you know, that's why in Tibetan Buddhism they'll have these deities, and some of them are peaceful, but others of them are the really pissed or these wrathful deities. That's what that's symbolically expressing.
So it's okay to be angry and to be full of rage and to go out there and but the thing is, you can't actually sort of like the saying that you can't visit hell without taking some of it back with you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you got to be really careful.
Yeah. Well, it's like, in a way, we're all potentially these like sort of healers or shamans in training. And I'll talk about that after the break, but I think that's a really important viewpoint for all of us to understand.
Okay, all shamans in training. I actually really want to cover that because the potential for me, as I mentioned before, if you've been endowed with particular talents and so on and so forth, which I believe I have been, they can so easily be used to hurt and maim and destroy and be twisted and manipulated. And I'm sick of being twisted. I'm sick of being manipulated. There's only really two things I really don't tolerate: being told what to do and ordered around, and being accused of being something that I'm not. Those are the two things that will happen that I just can't stand. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastonshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts. And my very special guest is Paul Levy. And let's go straight into what you were talking about at the end of the last segment about how we're all shamans in training.
Yeah, sure. So just to understand the archetype of the shaman, it typically will get activated in the psyche because of some form of trauma. So then we split off from a part of ourselves, and that will activate. The shaman typically is said to go on some sort of like this journey, you know, to retrieve the part of their soul that's gotten split, that's gotten frozen back in time. And typically when somebody gets called to be a shaman, it'll appear as if they're having some sort of breakdown, or they'll be acting, you know, kind of crazy because their psyche is disintegrating towards potentially a higher form of integration. Now, one of the things a shaman, to understand what a shaman really is, it's the primordial medicine man or healer. And when they work with, I say, a client or with the tribe or the community, and think of the community being the entire planet, all 7 billion of us, the shaman will actually take on the illness that's in that person or that community. And taking on means, well, they'll have it out with that illness, but they'll also, by taking it on, they'll take it into themselves, which means they become infected. But because they have enough sort of strength in their own mind and their own being, they will over time be able to metabolize that illness and heal themselves. And by them doing that non-locally, that gets actually, that informs and gets transmitted back to the person who had the illness, helping them to heal. So the point is, if we're all shamans, we have a permeable boundary. We're all interdependent, interconnected. We're not separate from the entire field. We all interface with the collective unconscious that pervades everywhere. And clearly, there is a psycho-spiritual disease in the collective unconscious. That's what I'm calling, that's what indigenous people call Watiko. So how can any of us not be sick by being in this world? We've all been infected, but by being shamans in training, to the extent that we're able to assimilate that illness, that darkness, that unconscious, that madness into ourselves, and alchemically have it feed our light and actually heal ourselves, then we're actually incarnating or embodying the archetype of the shaman, and that's where we can really be of help, you know, to other people and to the world.
You know, that's... that occurs to me that I am one of these people then, because that's what I do on a daily basis. Often we'll have people on the show who are going through real tough times, had their kids kidnapped or have their entire fortunes stolen by scumbags or something like that. And after a couple of hours on the show, I make sure to ask them at every point after this, because I try to relate. I try to help people understand. I try to have compassion for them during those broadcasts. And afterwards, even though everything is still crap in their life, they feel a hell of a lot better. They have actually been healed in a large part by speaking with me. And I think the reason why I'm able to do that is because I actually care enough to try and take on their pain, to try and take on these things that have happened to them, so that I can fully understand them. And as a result of taking this pain and suffering and things on, it weighs really heavily on me, but I'm able to transmute it back into happiness and joy. That said, I've got a joke for you. Do you know what you call an Iranian dictator who moves to Jamaican?
No.
The shaman.
I like that. So, you know, what I was going to say, though, about what you were just saying, Vinny, is that what you were just describing. So many of us are playing shamans without even maybe necessarily even being aware that we're doing it, just being an empathic, compassionate feeling person. And it's related to the archetype of what's called the wounded healer. Now, the wounded healer is somebody who suffered a great wound, and yet instead of going around the wound, you know, I just want to feel better, I don't want to feel the pain. No, the person who's the wounded healer, they actually descend, and the shaman typically descends into the unconscious, into the darkness, into the underworld. And the wounded healer, by descending into the pain and going through it and not getting caught in it, but coming out the other side, by having experienced consciously that experience of being wounded in themselves, that enables them to be with other people in their woundedness. And that's, in a way, what you're describing, you know. And we're all these wounded healer shamans, and I think it's really important for us to recognize that. And it gets particularly powerful when more and more of us connect with each other who are these, in a sense, bodhisattvas. It's very much like, if I can just bring up a really powerful image, it's like when you're in a dream and you recognize you're dreaming and you have lucidity. That's one thing. But when you're in that dream and you have that lucidity and you connect with other of your dream characters who are also awakening, and you put your realization together and you contemplate what you're discovering, that is, oh my God, this dream world we're in is just a reflection of our own mind. We're actually dreaming up, moment by moment, this very world that we inhabit. When enough people have that realization in that dream, enough dream characters, you can put those people's realization together in such a way where you can change the dream. And that's what's actually happening in the waking dream. That is, more and more of us wake up to who we are and to what's happening and to the dreamlike nature of reality, and we connect with each other. It's what I call, we can conspire to co-inspire. It's a true conspiracy theory. We can activate our collective genius in a way where we can dream ourselves awake. And that's evolutionary, and that's what's being offered to us.
Mm. Now, you talked about wounded shamans. I was wondering, what are the wounds that you've suffered?
Oh, my God. I mean, I almost got killed. You know, I'm an only child, and my father, it wound up, talk about a psychopath. My father was a psychopath. He was a world-class psychopath, but undiagnosed. And I was the sensitive kid who was really tracking. There was something really unsavory coming through my father. So then, of course, like, this is why I could recognize it when you know, other people describe their experience of being, they become demonized. I couldn't believe it. I became the identified patient. I became, in the family system, seen as the one who was crazy or sick or was the problem. And I got thrown, when I was in my early to mid-20s, for a year, maybe four or five different times, I got thrown in mental hospitals and diagnosed, oh, you have a chemical imbalance, you'll have your, you know, manic depressive, you have to take this medication for the rest of your life till your last breath. And here it is. Meanwhile, I haven't taken medication for like over 30 years with no like episodes. And I just thought they were completely out of their mind. But it almost destroyed me, because then the psychiatric community, at least in America, is so unbelievably insane and abusive that they're just trained to pathologize. You know, I can't quite see that. What is that saying?
I'm holding up the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, and what it says in one of the articles, psychiatry now officially insane.
Yeah. Okay, no, totally. And that was my experience. I was like a mole who had unwittingly like burrowed his way into the inner sanctum of psychiatry. And once I saw the complete and utter insanity, I just got out as soon as I could. But meanwhile, the tragedy of it is that my parents in their generation, people who were doctors, were supposedly authority figures who actually had some wisdom. So my parents totally bought in to the psychiatrist's point of view that their only child, me, had this mental illness, and that I'm just in denial of my mental illness. And both my parents very tragically died taking to their grave the point of view that I was crazy. So I've just had to deal with that. And I've been excommunicated by the remaining family members. They want to have nothing to do with me because I'm picking up the voice in the family system that's typically taboo and not supposed to be spoken, and that I was pointing at that my father was a psychopath. But by the family protecting him, and I couldn't understand. But of course, the family and the mental health system protecting the psychopath of my father, that introduced me to the non-local field. And I realized, oh my God, when there's evil in the field and you flood light on it, the non-local field will actually protect the darkness. And actually, not only is it protecting the darkness, but it's actually revealing this higher dimensional, deeper phenomena of the non-local field, which was what I needed to discover my work.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. You go after a psychopath and you suddenly realize, oh my God, they're not alone. They've got a whole army.
Yeah. Well, it's like the whole field of consciousness non-locally, unless you have incredible skillfulness. And keep in mind, I was in like my mid-20s. So I was just like in this innocent, just wanting to like discover the truth. And I couldn't believe my mother protected my father. The psychiatrist protected him. And it was mind-blowing. So, yeah, so I almost got destroyed. I almost got killed. I almost got driven crazy. I lost all my friends. Everybody turned against me. But yet it was so – I was having a profound spiritual awakening. It couldn't have been more obvious from inside of myself. And that's what got me through. I just – and then I got I began to meet my teachers, these great, these Tibetan, these lamas or Burmese masters – or just different teachers. And then when I found people who really saw who I was and saw me in my wholeness, because psychiatrists are trained to pathologize, and they're under such a spell that when they, particularly somebody who's awakening, they're in a really vulnerable, fragile state. And when you're seen by an authority figure as being pathological, it will literally invoke the pathological part of you. So you become sicker when you're pathologized. And then to the psychiatrist, that confirms to them the objective truth of their diagnosis in a completely demonic feedback loop. And they're both...
It's funny. That reminds me of if your girlfriend keeps accusing you of cheating on her and you haven't cheated on her, eventually you think, you know what, I may as well.
Right. No, it's exactly that. So the psychiatrists were both simultaneously casting a spell while being under a spell at the same time. So it was maddening. So I have incredible insight into the insanity of psychiatry that very few people have. And it's not by reading books. It's by actually experiencing it. And psychiatry literally destroyed my family. I have no family left whatsoever. And so, I've just had to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, this is a topsy-turvy world, so it makes sense that the crazy people would be running the mental asylum.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I've only said very little about, and in my book, in the afterword of the book, I actually, I actually go into my psychiatric experience as a way of, trying to just create context for what gave me the authority to author a book on evil. It was having to do because I encountered evil firsthand in a close encounter of the Watiko kind.
Yeah, exactly. And indeed, it was actually the fourth kind, because they kidnapped you.
Yeah. No, totally. And they wanted not only to give me a diagnosis, they wanted to give me a whole this new like job. They wanted to create a vocation. They wanted to pay me money to become a mental patient. you know, and I would have gotten SSI or Social Security. And I just saw through the whole thing. It's like, oh, my God, this is insanity. If I subscribe to this, you know, then I'm signing my own death warrant.
Mm. Well, so what do you mean? Did they say, oh, you can experiment with this drug and then we'll pay you and we'll give you Social Security and benefits and so on and so forth?
There were these benefits. If I agreed, I was telling them when they were giving me, you know, there was one point in one hospital, they had a big conference with all the psychiatrists all together and me. And they said to me, you know, oh, we've all agreed 100% that you have a mental illness. And I just said to them, you're completely out of your mind. You have no idea what you're talking about. But the point is that if I agreed with their diagnosis, then I would have gotten benefits. I would have gotten, you know, money every month to support me in my newfound identity as mentally ill. And I just saw that. That's an incredible spell. I didn't want to have that, you know, even though I would have gotten money from it. I saw it's not worth it a millionfold, you know, so I just quickly as I could stepped out of that whole dream of psychiatry. And it's sad because so many people who are in psychiatric hospitals are potentially having some form of spiritual awakening or shamanic, like these like deeper like initiatory experiences, but are like not only not recognized, but are pathologized and medicated, and their whole experience becomes aborted, and they then become sick, and it's like they have a failed initiation.
You know, it occurs to me, I've spoken to a number of girls about this, about how most of these so-called psychiatric disorders and things like that don't really exist. There's no scientific evidence or basis for them whatsoever. And they're like, but I've been told that I was ADHD since I was little. It's a lie, okay? They're just drugging you so that you won't be an entrepreneur, which is has the exact same symptomology as people with ADD or ADHD, okay? Oh, but somebody says, oh, I was manically depressed. Have you had a really crap life full of douchebags that are completely trying to frack it up the whole time? Well, yes, that's why you're depressed. It's because you're meant to be doing something about it. Your body is telling you to do something about it, not telling you to drug yourself, okay?
Yeah.
This whole thing, this whole industry is built upon something that does not exist. And you know, when we're sitting there and you versus all these psychiatrists, you know what it makes me think of? Joe versus the volcano. And it's just complete insanity.
Let's sacrifice this person to the volcano. Yeah, that'll cure all these ills and things like that. We'll get some benefit out of it. Let's buy him Tweedledee or Tweedledum and get him, sail him out there.
It's you know,
yeah.
Insanity is very little understood, I think. And what occurs to me is that those people who accuse others of being insane, who consider themselves authorities on what is and what isn't insane, are often the craziest of us.
Yeah, no, totally. And particularly when so what happened for me after getting out of the last hospital, I entered into this, you know, I found a psychiatrist who I thought was a good person and had some form of awareness, and we did therapy. But then at a certain point, I began to see her shadow and her unconscious just as part of like the interaction between us. And we all have a shadow. We all have an unconscious. We all have a part of us that's mad to the extent that we're not fully awake. And I just began pointing at that. And right away, she like absolutely identified, I'm the healthy one, she said to me, and you're the sick one. It was like she had a monopoly on what it was to be healthy, and she was so projecting out her own sickness. And I realized, oh my God, she's out of her mind. And that's when I stopped working with her. But that's like this living example I had of exactly what you're pointing at.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you just stop working with her. And this is what I do as well, and this is what we should all do. As soon as you realize that the person that you're with is completely insane, just stop interacting with them.
Yeah,
couldn't be simpler.
Yeah. And that's why, you see, it's really important. One of the word bodhisattva, my favorite translation of the word is a being who's in the process of awakening. And so from that point of view, who among us is not a bodhisattva? And when you hang out with other bodhisattvas, with other beings in the process of awakening, it creates a field that's really supportive for your own awakening.
Like a circle of protection, in other words. If you surround yourself with morons, you become a moron. You surround yourself with psychopaths, you become a psychopath. You surround yourself with good, loving, decent people who actually give a frack about yourself and everybody else and humanity in general. Hey, guess what you're going to become? You're going to become a good person. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christopher Green. Make sure to tune in to Green Wave Radio every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m. Central on American Freedom Radio. Hard-hitting and in-your-face, America.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they see, they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you, give me a dessert, give me a dessert, give me a dessert. Have your dessert, you prick, give me that dessert. Have a Bloody Mary, yeah, give me a whiskey sour, yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go.
Welcome back.
You want to know what it's like?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Paul Levy. I keep wanting to say Dr. Paul Levy because he reminds me of Dr. Thomas Levy. But anyway, what we're talking about here is psychopaths, shamanism, mind parasites, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, there's a lot of people like this out there, and apparently it's between 1 in 100 and 4 out of 100, 1 in every 25, are infected by this parasite. Now, I wonder, is that number increasing or decreasing? Because at the moment in humanity, there are it seems to be not only is the darkness growing darker, but the light is growing brighter. Have you noticed that? And there's an old saying, and it relates to a lot of things, but particularly evil. You can walk into a room that's full of light and brightness and things like that. It doesn't matter how much darkness you bring in, you can't darken out the light. But you can do the reverse. You can walk into a room that is completely dark, pitch black, and you put on and you light one candle, and it'll chase away the darkness in every direction.
Yeah.
What do you think, Paul? Do you think things are getting better or worse, or like me, do you believe things are getting better and worse at the same time?
Yeah, well, no, it's a great question. And the way I conceive of that, you know, just go back to this being a dream. And when you're in a dream, and say if you're in a dream and the darkness is getting darker and evil is really coming out from hiding in the corners or hiding underground, and it's really just becoming darker and darker, that's an expression that light is nearby. Because when you have shadows, shadows are simultaneously the expression of an absence of light and its presence. So the fact that the evil, it's not even hiding anymore, you know, these evil powers through the powers that be, it's just so fully obvious for anybody who has eyes to see. And the way I see that is that that's from the higher dimensional point of view, that's an expression that some deeper, almost like cosmic light is coming more and more into the dream. And for particularly for people who are really, you know, doing work on themselves and really sensitive and creating, one could almost say, like an energy body to contain and to be like the mediator of that light, and we become its agents of helping to bring in that light into incarnation.
Mm. As a result, we become targets. This is what I found interesting is when I started doing this, not only do my enemies suddenly realize who I am, but so do my allies. My allies come to my aid and my enemies come to my door.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it's funny because I just got somebody, you know, had just read my book, this actual shaman, this major shaman person who, you know, was so blown away by like how I'm just flooding light on evil. And he just couldn't say enough good words about it. And then he said, oh, are you prepared for when the Empire strikes back? You know, and I said to him via email, I said, well, the Empire has been striking back for 30 years inside of my own mind. And I said to him, what I mean by that is that when you're shedding light on dark, you know, the evil doesn't like that. And that's part of the whole process. And so, you know, the whole idea is just to really connect yourself with your true nature, with your heart, with your love, with your compassion. And in a sense, that's the greatest protection.
Mm. Love and compassion. Yeah, I think I've got a lot of that. I'm really glad that I've got a missus, actually, who's very much along those lines of things. And she's been able to see entities and spiritual things since she was a small girl living in South Africa. And what I find great about our relationship is that when I came home from a meeting really angry the other night, right? And she actually felt my anger and my rage before I even stepped through the door. And then within about 15 minutes of being with her talking about this, it just kind of went away. Like, she does that for me.
Yeah, 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 sure. It's like she's playing the role of shaman or healer for you. And that's so far out because, you know, that's a sort of the symbol or reflection of how we can play that role for each other.
Yeah, and of course, role reversal, the same thing will happen. She'll come home from work really tired and depressed or whatever, and in the 15 minutes with me, I'll make her feel better about it. And, you know, it's a really good reciprocal relationship, and I wish everybody had a relationship like that, but the fact is most of us don't.
Yeah, that's an expression of a healthy relationship, because I see this because I have all these circles that I facilitate all throughout the week of people who are awakening to the dream. To the dreamlike nature. And if somebody is always getting cast in one role and that role isn't switching, then that, from the dreaming point of view, that's an expression that there's an obscuration in the field. But if, like, one night I pick up the role of, oh, I'm the healer, or the next night you're the healer, or the next night, you know, then if it's fluidly being shared, that's an expression of, like, a really healthy family system.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we were talking about psychiatry before, and I was just wondering, in terms of the real world, the real world, like there is one. The Rockefeller Foundation, weren't they behind this whole thing? They were behind psychiatry, they're behind feminism, they're behind, pretty much everything that you could think of, the military and so on and so forth. There's a lot of things that these people are really advancing, and it simultaneously destroys people's minds. It kills people ad infinitum. It destroys families. It's essentially like, you know, when you're tenderizing meat, for example, you need to bash it quite considerably. And I think what these different foundations and things like that the Rockefellers are involved in is they're tenderizing the human race to make it more supple and more easily consumed by these entities.
Yeah, no, well, there's something, you know, I mean, just to be careful, because the edge is, oh, you're opening yourself up to being accused of being a conspiracy theorist. But no, there's something.
I am a conspiracy theorist. I don't deny it. Look, here's my definition of a conspiracy theorist. A conspiracy theorist is a person who absolutely believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence actually use their power and influence. That's what a conspiracy theorist is.
And they work together for that aim. No, absolutely, you know. And, I mean, I just think about what you were saying made me think, in psychiatry, if I took on their image of who I was, which was to say, oh, I'm mentally ill, then they would consider that a successful treatment. And there's something wrong with that picture.
Let me get this straight. In order to be right, you have to agree that I'm correct. Does that sound freaking insane to you? It sounds insane to me.
Yeah, no. It's totally insane, you know. Now, if I could just go back to, like, because there's another way of understanding something else to understand about Watiko, in that, you know, it's like the instrument that we have available to us to inquire into how it works is the mind, and yet the mind is what it operates through. And so, you see, it really creates this conundrum, because we actually can't understand it with the mind, and yet it operates through the mind. And so, you see, so that actually is pointing at, there's a way of actually just observing what's happening from almost like sort of this meta perspective, from a place where you begin to just watch what's happening, and then you begin to see, you know, your own internal reactions. Because keep in mind, Watiko, it actually feeds itself off of our unconscious reactions. And so when we begin to see it, and particularly in my book, I actually, towards the end, I talk about, you know, in mythology, when there's a demon, you know, or in a fairy tale, when there's like a demon, the demon gets sort of depotentiated. You take away its power when you find its name. Okay, there's something, there's like this magical power when you find the name, and it can't just be any name, it has to be the right name. And so one of the things I'm bringing out in the book, and you know, I'm not at all attached to whether the name is Watiko, or in an earlier book I call the same phenomena malignant egophrenia, or ME disease, me disease. It's what Watiko is. It's a misidentification of who we imagine we are, you know. Or
that's why society's so fracked up, because everybody's about me, me, me.
Yeah. Well, that's a description of Watiko, where it's all about consuming and more, and it's insatiable. That's where it's like a wolf, like wolf-like hunger, or like a vampire. You can never fill yourself, and it's all based on this. It's like pathological, this narcissism that's gotten out of control, and that's like, you know, according to our cultural like sort of way of viewing, that's like considered normal. Not only normal, but that's considered to be good, and it's completely upside down. It's inverted, and that's one of the other ways we're understanding Watiko. It's like this logic. It's a way of thinking that's inverted. That's actually upside down. That you, whatever's true, you're actually trained to see as false, and you know, the opposite, vice versa. And so what I'm trying to articulate right now is that to the extent that we really begin to see how this bug works within our own operating system of our minds and our hearts and our soul, by actually shedding light on it and making it conscious, because it works through the unconscious, through the parts of us that are blind. Because remember, I was saying it's a form of psychic blindness. To the extent that we really flood light on how it works, we actually then disempower the bug and simultaneously empower ourselves. And particularly when you connect with other people who are doing that, because what you said right before the last break, you were saying something like it's really important who you hang out with. Well, the Buddha himself said exactly that. He said, don't hang out with fools, that it's really important to surround yourself with other bodhisattvic beings, with beings in the process of awakening, and then you can activate the collective genius of all of us in such a way that the sum is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
You know, and that's really apparent to me as well, because of all the people that contribute to the show, including the listeners and things like that. Like, for example, you've been organized to come on the show by our French producer, Guillaume. And last week, the Psychopath Roundtable, or Archon Roundtable, was done by another producer that we have named Mel. And then, of course, what's happening is I couldn't do all of this on my own, or maybe I could, but the fact of the matter is, if I'm actually using what's there, if people are helping me to do what I do best, we all create something together that is much better than what any of us could do on our own.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, and that's why, like, as an artist, because I'm an artist, I'm actually creating an art happening called Global Awakening. Art happening called Global Awakening. And what that is like, so say if you're in a dream and you have the recognition that you're dreaming, and then you connect with other people who are also recognizing they're dreaming, and you realize, oh, we could all put our realization together to change the dream. That's what this art happening called Global Awakening is like. So say if you were to imagine that you were waking up in the dream and recognizing the dream, how would you dream it? You know, and I would say that if you dream it so that there's still one person who doesn't get it, well, then it wouldn't be satisfying, because that one person is an embodied reflective part of you. It's the whole idea in Buddhism of when somebody becomes enlightened and they're about to enter into nirvana, they look back and they see all their fellow suffering brothers and sisters, and they make the bodhisattva vow that I'm not going to enter nirvana until everyone gets it. Because who are they recognizing that everyone is? Just parts of themselves. So in that same way, we as artists, as co-dreamers and artists of this world whose canvas is this universe, we can actually put our inspiration together and create an actual, like, a whole other dream. And this isn't New Age woo-woo stuff. This is actually what's available to us, and it's what all of this is about.
Now, speaking of it being a New Age woohoo and things of that nature, there is, in fact, an element of the New Age movement that I believe is indeed satanic, or at least, at the very least, fulfilling an agenda of that nature. However, it doesn't mean that if you talk about it, or if you say things that are even slightly similar, that you're a head-hunting, blood-drinking Satanist, does it? And this is what really irritates me about people, is they throw the baby out with the bathwater. They attack the messenger. Instead of listening to the information, instead of picking out what's real and what's not and that kind of thing, and trying to understand you, instead of even asking so much as a question, they start with the accusations straight away. There's nothing behind.
Well, that's Well, that's what one of the things that happens, you see, when say if we're carrying a particular truth or a message or a vibration and we offer it and say it triggers somebody, what most people do, because being triggered is uncomfortable, they right away want the other person, the messenger who brought the message, to stop expressing that so that they'll feel better. But, you know, there's an actual beautiful spiritual practice that when we get triggered by somebody, instead of concretizing them as being the problem, we can actually inquire into what inside of us has been triggered. Then it's an opportunity for even deepening our awakening and more expanding our consciousness and deepening our compassion. That's very different. But what you're describing, most people, when somebody's triggering them or upsetting them, they want that person to stop, to go away.
You see, when somebody's upsetting me or doing that, I want them to stop. I want them to go away. But only if they're saying things that are complete lies that I know to be lies, okay? Like, for example, Vinny, you're a Satanist. That's what the block function on Facebook and YouTube is so blessed for, you know, some scumbag. Block.
Come, the sin returns.
Yeah, no, that's because, you know, it's important. We only, you know, how we invest our energy, our psychic energy. And so it's important not to invest it in relationships that are going to be like these vampiric relationships where we feel drained.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes I might try and argue with them for a couple of sentences or something like that. But if they don't get it right away, no, I don't think I want to be friends with you, bro. Just block, and there's 7 billion other people out there that I could rather be spending my time with. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Of the Vinny Eastwood Show. This one has been great with Paul Levy. And the website is awakeninthedream.com. That's awakeninthedream.com. And here's a quote from Sting that I read out earlier. I always look forward to reading Paul's work. It stimulates me to greater heights of lucidity, disturbs me enough to awaken me out of my complacency, and encourages me to fly on the wings of the creative imagination. The world would be a better place if everyone read his book. His vision is a royal gift for all of us. It makes me want to sing. Bravo. So, like, we're sitting here with Paul Levy, the guy who makes things sting. Is that your thing?
You know, it was just cool. Like, one day I just opened my email. This was years ago, and I get an email from Sting, and he's just saying, hey, I'm a big fan of yours. I read your work. So we've just connected, you know, for years now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good when that happens like that. Like, I remember Freemason whistleblower was saying how John Malkovich was reading his book and that kind of thing. And I don't know what it is. Are we intoxicated by celebrity, or is it just a novelty? Like, oh, this famous person's reading, watching my work. That's cool.
Yeah, no, well, I think that's part of, like, if we're not fully in touch with our own Buddha nature, then we don't just project out the shadow, you know, in a negative way, but we also project out the shadow in a positive way, you know, our own light. And so then celebrities are perfect, sort of like these receptacles to embody our own incredibleness. And, you know, and then we just react to them like they're outside of ourselves. It's sort of like a kitten who's in front of a mirror and she sees her reflection, and we react, and that kitten like reacts to the reflection thinking it's another kitten. And then it becomes an endless, just conditioned response. That, in a sense, is another way of describing Watiko. And it's a way of describing when we just empower these celebrities as being something special.
They're not anything special. They're just normal people. And that's interesting because I'm actually now a celebrity, Paul. Isn't interesting? Uh-huh. You're a celebrity when you can't go to a dance festival or a protest without half the people there going, "Hey, it's Vinny! Oh my God, guerrilla media!"
Oh wow, cool.
You know, that's what it feels like to me. And you know, the first thing I do to try and break that bubble for them, you know, it's like, "No, I'm not a celebrity. Give me a hug, bro. Give me a hug. Karate, right here. Bring it on in. Yeah, thank you very much." I think it breaks that barrier between this person that they see on the microphone and in front of the camera, and then it makes it real for them. They suddenly realize they're dealing with an actual flesh and blood creature here. They're not just some projected entity that is coming across in a digital medium.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why, like, you know, one of the ways of sort of seeing, because the thing about Watiko is that it operates through our perceptions. And it feeds on, like I was saying before, polarization. So when we begin to understand that we're all in the soup together, that we're interconnected, interdependent, we're not separate, you know, and like I've been saying, but it's so important, it bears repeating, that the expression of that realization is compassion, you know, and you know, to actually see, yeah, we're not separate. We all, that if I help you, guess what? I get as much benefit as you do. You know, that's a whole different paradigm. That's not based on separation, but that's based on like this interconnectedness. And in that world, like the Watiko virus can't flourish, and it then just dissolves back into the emptiness out of which it arose.
Mm. Send the demon back to hell. In other words, you know, return to sender, return to Caesar what Caesar's. You ever heard of that saying?
Yeah, but it's even more than returning the demon back to hell. It's returning the actual demon back to its origin, which is emptiness, which is to say that ultimately it doesn't even have any independent intrinsic existence whatsoever. That there's, you know, like, I'll just give you an example. A number of years ago, one of my teachers came to Portland and was giving this empowerment. He's this lama, this Tibetan lama, and he was giving this this blessing ceremony and empowerment to dispel curses and black magic. And we had so many hundreds of people coming to that empowerment that we literally had to turn people away. And he made the point, he said, look, as he's right before he's giving the empowerment, he says, look, if you think that this is going to actually, like, you know, break a curse or, you know, get rid of demons, no. That perspective itself is only going to actually, unconsciously be feeding the very demon, because you're investing it with an unwarranted, like, reality that it actually exists. The point is you actually need to see that there's no such thing as a demon other than your own mind, that there's nothing, there's no curse or spell. You're putting yourself under your own spell, and that's what you need to see through. And then when you see through that, you just stop doing it. There's nothing there that's other than your own energy, and that's to really begin to wake up.
Mm. I am the food source, really, isn't it? And all I must do is withdraw myself.
Yeah. It's like these entities, like whether you call them archons or Watiko, it's like a feeding phenomena. It's like having to do with consuming, endless consumption, right? And so when you realize, oh, that we're the food source, you exactly like what you just said, Vinny, you just actually stop offering yourself as being food for the vampire.
I mean, ladies and gentlemen, when you're on a boat and you're surrounded by sharks, do you cut yourself and then jump into the water? No, because you get eaten. Same thing with these creatures. They're circling around you, and jumping into the water bleeding is the same with the shark analogy as it is to feel fear. Or to actually think that they're more powerful than you, or to start to try and interact with them and that kind of thing. You can't interact with them. You can't make friends with them. They're sharks with a bloodthirst and a feeding frenzy.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's even more than that, because, you know, from the dreaming point of view, in the ultimate sense, they're actually helping you to develop your own enlightenment. And, like, one way to understand this with the Buddha himself, when he was sitting under, you know, the Bodhi tree, you know, right before he attained enlightenment, all the forces of Mara, the evil one, were, you know, coming to distract him or seduce him or mess with him. And so here these evil forces seem to be like these obstructions and these adversaries. And yet they were secretly Buddha's allies because he couldn't have developed the muscle of realization without their playing that role. And so that, I think, is a really important point of view. When you see these seemingly like evil seeming entities, they're actually stimulating our lucidity and helping us to catalyze. Like if they didn't exist, we would have to invent them because we need them to grow. We need them to evolve. And that point of view cuts through the whole duality of opposites of, oh, good and bad as being separate. In alchemy, the expression of the real, when the gold is made, the alchemical gold, is the coincidentia oppositorum, the coincidence of opposites. It's when the opposites join together and you recognize they're indistinguishably one. That's an expression of connecting with the self, of your Buddha nature, of your own light. And that's to really dispel, in a real ultimate sense, the evil of Watiko.
Well, and also I've got to say the point that you can't avoid conflict in your life as well, because it's like a role-playing game. And this is what occurred to me when you're seeing there, you know, like people play Dungeons & Dragons or a computer game called Diablo, where you go out, you kill creatures, and each creature that you kill gives you experience points. And experience points gets to a certain level, and then you're capable of upgrading your character, new skills, new abilities, extra strength, extra charisma, so on and so forth. Without vanquishing the demons, you cannot become a stronger being.
Yeah, exactly. If there's no like friction, you can't create light. Or if you have a seed and you put a seed in your hand, it's not going to grow. But you put the seed under the soil where there's resistance and it'll sprout into a tree. It's the same idea.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, don't be afraid to take them head on to a large degree. But again, I wanted to reiterate one of the points that was raised in one of the other psychopath discussions, is that these are not pleasant entities. Sure, you can talk about them and that kind of thing, but don't have any interactions with them once you know who you're dealing with, because nothing positive comes out of the relationships with these people, does it? They if you try to attack them, they'll attack you back. And they don't have rules, unlike you. You've got things like morality, ethics, you know. Your hand will be stayed. They don't. They will kill you or your children, or they will burn down your house, this kind of thing. And which means that all you got to do is just stop feeding them. Walk away. If they've stolen your business, walk away. They've taken over your house, walk away. Once they have their food source, which is you, your fear, your anger, your interaction, once that food source disappears, they starve and die like they should.
Yeah. No, that's true. And they're very much like, think about, like, you know, if there's like this vampiric figure, it you know, it can only come into your scene, into your house, if you invite it in. And then any interaction you have, it's just feeding off of your energy. So exactly what you're saying, Vinny, the way to kill the vampire, you know, is to actually just step out of that relationship.
Starve it of blood. And just like vampires, these psychopathic entities, they really suck. And it's not worth hanging around, bro. Shine the light on them. Burn them to dust. All right. Paul Levy has been my guest. Thank you very much for coming on. The website is awakeninthedream.com. That's awakeninthedream.com. You can get his books, and I'm sure that they will help you as well. Paul, thank you very much. It's been a wonderful show.
It has been so much my pleasure, Vinny. Thank you so much.
All right. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for supporting me. Please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, subscribe for $5 a month, or donate, because I can't pay the bills otherwise and keep exposing scumbaggery. We'll see you again sometime.